It's the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 118. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. I'm joined first by Jerem Jordan of BYU TV to talk about some of the awesome things they're doing there and whether we'll see more programs like the BYU Football Top 50 Plays. We also talk a little bit about his thoughts on the upcoming football season and touch on volleyball. Matt and I then do our season preview show. We do over-unders on the stat lines for Taysom Hill, Cody Hoffman, Jamal Williams, and Kyle Van Noy, and give our game-by-game thoughts. This is, once again, the Rise and Shout Podcast. You can always download us on iTunes. Soon, you're going to be able to catch us at LoyalCougars.com. And, of course, you're listening to this extra-long podcast right now. Welcoming to the podcast a first-time guest, Jerem Jordan of BYU TV. Jerem, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. How many to surpass Gregor Bell?
A lot. We need to have you on basically straight from here till sometime in November.
I'm gunning for Brandon Gurney then. How about that?
Gurney, you've got a much better shot at. So, Jerem, I actually, we were just talking before we started recording, and you actually listened to the podcast, which the question I think that's on everybody's mind is why?
I do. I really enjoy it. I really know the pulse of the fans, and I think that the two of you and what you do, consistency is key. You guys do it every week, and so it's really entertaining and exciting to hear what you think. I want to know what fans think, and not just in Utah. I can gauge that pretty well on my own here, but in Minnesota and Texas, and wherever Matt goes and he gets around, I want to know what you guys think, and what you think of the top 50, and what you think of the team, and what you see in here, and what's interesting. So I use that for materials. I prepare stuff for True Blue or the pre and post game shows or whatnot. So it's much appreciated, and you guys do really good work, not only with Vanquish the Foe and then Loyal Cougars, but of course with the weekly podcast. So props to you guys.
Thanks, Jerem. We appreciate it. So let's give you some props in return. So BYU TV and all of the associated stuff with the sports coverage that's happened since independence, to put it in technical terms, has been pretty awesome, or one of the best parts of independence. So let's start there. What do you guys have in store? I know now, I mean, obviously there's been a flurry of programming that didn't exist on BYU TV before independence, or at least not on a regular basis. And now we have all of this great stuff, like the recent top 50 football plays that you had on. So what can we expect? More shows like that top 50 show on football, on basketball, and potentially even on other sports, those kind of, fun exploration shows?
I would very much like to do that. Top 50 really was a grand desire of mine last summer. Just as I'm like you guys, I'm a fan. I just happen to have a job where I can actually express it on a TV station, which is super weird to me still and fun. So Top 50 was, I really liked what Major League Baseball Network has done with, like, they do Top 75 like all the time, like greatest catches ever. And then the Best Damn Sports Show period on Fox Sports, they used to do, top 50 basketball shots of all time. I thought, wouldn't that be cool if we did one for football? And I thought, who's we? Like, BYU TV, we could do it. So last summer, we met for a couple weeks on end, several hours of meetings to brainstorm the plays, try and categorize them, and then spend the time to gather them. And then I knew that once we got into the season, which is kind of August through April, we wouldn't have necessarily the time to do it justice and get it out there. So in May, we spent more time, this is almost a year later, this May, spent the time to actually formulate our ideas, write the script, and then we taped it the day after Media Day, and then about 4 or 5 weeks later it aired. And I was quite pleased with it. I love the reaction. I decided to use hashtag BYU Top 50 just to be able to gauge the pulse of the fans. And it was fun. I think that the funnest thing was seeing people's like zealous experiences. Like one person said, I've had an overwhelming spiritual experience. randomly, John, by the way, popular LDS youth speaker, left me a message on my phone and said, I've watched it 3 times. I'm watching it tonight with my mother-in-law. I was like, what the heck? It was just like YouTube on TV of the best plays in BYU history. And so it was quite pleasing to do it. We could always have done, we could have done it a little better, but I wanted to just pick one. We could have spent years interviewing people as they came to Provo and like had more surrounding the plays, but it wouldn't have come out for a couple years. So I thought, let's just do the plays, something out there, and then let's go from there. And so now we're in the let's go from there and let's do some more.
That's awesome. I can say that I have watched it twice, and the first time I watched it, I think you tweeted back at me, but I live, quote unquote, live tweeted it, even though it's like a week later.
I remember it was on a Sunday.
Yeah, it was a Sunday. My wife and kids were out of town, and I was here sitting here by myself, and said, you know what, I'm going to watch this and I'm going to tweet about it. And the funny thing was, I thought no one would respond, but like you said, there's been a lot of reaction. Is there a play in that 50 that people either think is way over or underrated? Did you get one particular play that, where people really, really disagreed with where it sat in the rankings?
Like outside of the top, I want to say 20, it's a little blurry to me still, on the numbers, but I received one email and several tweets. I don't get a ton of emails from, like, people email BYTV and then they'll pass that along to me if it's like about one of my shows. It's very rare. Someone could not believe how many Riley Nelson plays were in there.
Yes, they
were so upset that Riley Nelson was so prominently played. And I thought, okay, it's not about Riley Nelson. Like, when he throws a pass to Cody Hoffman that he juggles against Oregon State, that's a Cody Hoffman play. That's not a Riley Nelson play.
Well, and then the one where oh, gosh, I can't remember. Who's the lineman whose helmet came off?
Tulsa, Armed Forces Bowl. And so that's a Matt Reynolds play to me, and that's a Matt Reynolds play, yeah. And so, you know what? We said at the beginning of the show, too, there's going to be certain – we're going to just have more that's recent, basically, because we have the rights to it, and we have it, and it looks better. So there's a lot of criteria there. We could have made stuff that was – we could have done a top 50 from the 80s, for goodness sake.
Oh, sure.
One that stuck out, to answer your question a little more, was I think we had the Armed Forces Bowl play, that play, where Cody Hoffman makes a tremendous play at the 5 to get into the end zone, by the way, on that. That was ranked ahead of, like, the 2 Kale Aluhi catches to cap the beginning and end of the 96 season.
Yes.
So when I watched it live, that was the only play where I was like, oh, I messed up on the order on that one, definitely.
Yeah.
The rest of them I felt okay about. We had one Luke Staley play. We didn't have any James Dye. We didn't have any, like, Jaron Dabney, Mike Regal return, you know. I made a list that night, the night it aired, of 20 other plays where I thought, you know what? Why didn't we even consider some of these plays? Or we did and they weren't high enough. And so that's the one thing that I wish we could have taken a little more time on.
Matt and I talked about it last week on the podcast, our plays.
Yeah, the fantasy draft.
Yeah, we did our little draft. One play that we forgot to mention that I meant to mention was a play I saw in person when Gennaro Guilford had the interception to seal a win against Utah in that 2001 season. And, mm-hmm. You know, some of these things, Jerem, I mean, it's like, it's personal, right? Like, I was at that game. I had a great view of the play. And is it a top 10 BYU play in history? Probably not, though 2001 was a very good season. But some of this is very personal. One of our older brothers, Don, said there was way too many recent plays, like you know, and you guys said that up front. But I actually thought there was a pretty good balance, especially when you consider the fact that, I mean, most of the people that are watching it, let's be honest, we didn't see the 1980 Miracle Bowl. Most of the people that are watching it on television, so. Right. You know, we've seen that replay on TV, but I was 4. I may have been watching it, but my memory's not that good. Well, let's...
And the Guilford one made the top 15, if I'm not mistaken. That one was super personal to me as well. I went down to that game in a Kevin Federick jersey.
Nice.
With $50, by myself to try and get into that game. I'm like 16. I guess I had no friends or something. And I was trying to get into that game. BYU's 10-0 at that point, or 11-0. They played 10-0 going into the Utah game, and then they played Mississippi State the next week. So I was trying to get into the game, and some guy just gave me a free 12th-row seat that was worth $35 and let me into the game, and I was able to witness that. So, yeah. That's part of it, too. It wasn't just seeing those plays. It was the experiences of the individuals associated with those plays.
Yeah.
Either at the game or watching it or with family or, like, back to Harleen. Like, you felt that adrenaline in the game.
Oh, yeah, some totally. Of those plays,
as if you didn't know what was going to happen, but you knew what was going to happen, but in your mind you were like, oh, here it comes. So, even for me, having seen it literally 8 times, in editing before, it was still very exciting on TV.
Oh, yeah, it was fantastic. You guys do that. You could come up with a new list every year. I'm watching. You just reorder them and throw in a few more plays that you didn't the last time. Well, let's talk this football season. Hopefully there will be a play or two that would be in the discussion for the next time you guys do a top 50 or some ranking like this. One of the things that's hard to predict, Jerem, about this season, and you know you're around the team more often, of course, than most of us fans are, or at least certainly more often than we are. What is this offense going to be? I mean, I've had every guest I ask that, and I get a different answer, which is some, you know, Jay Drew on the podcast last week is like, I think they're going to kind of, you know, fits and starts, and there's going to be a lot of awkward things happen in the first couple of games. And then Greg or others have come on the podcast and say they think it's going to hit running, maybe not at 100%, but pretty darn close come Virginia time. What's your take? Is this, I mean, it's so unpredictable with a completely new offensive scheme, even though it's an offensive coordinator we've all had experience with.
Yeah, I really could go either way, I guess, just because we don't have anything to go off of for this other than what's gone on in practice. And, of course, they've stuttered at times, but I really think they're going to catch Virginia off guard. The first or second day of practice, we talked to Jamal Williams and did an interview that we posted on YouTube that was super funny about Jamal just talking about the pace is going to just disrupt everything that the opponent's going to do. And he was extremely funny in how he presented it, but I think BYU is going to come sprinting out of the gate. I think Virginia is going to have a hard time with the speed. I think the hardest people with the speed will be the umpires placing the ball, and I think that BYU with basically we had 2 games of sample size with Taysom, where he had the best one of the year, which was Utah State, and then Hawaii is a bad team, but he played very well in the game. I think we've seen enough to think that Taysom is fully capable of doing really well and right away with all the receivers back, with all the tight ends back, with all the running backs back. Robert and I's back. I really like what I'm seeing at practice, and I think BYU, although I don't know that it will turn into like 40 points per se, I just think Virginia is going to be on their heels the whole game.
Well, anything's better than the offense of the past 3 seasons, which has been statistically speaking, some of the worst offenses BYU have had in the modern era, at least. So, because this is our season prediction show, I'm going to ask you to predict the season as far as win total goes. So if I set the win total at 9.5, are you taking the over or the under on wins for the Cougars this year?
Let me preface my answer with this. If you say, if someone thinks that BYU is going to win 6+, then you have to include a bowl game. I just think you have to do it, because then if they're going to go to a bowl game. So I would take the under, because I think it's going to be 9. I think that there's 3, maybe 4, I think there's 2 or 3 regular season games that BYU, drops, and then maybe the bowl game. I like BYU's chances in a bowl game against an unmotivated Pac-12 team. But I hope that, like, 10 is, like, way out there with the schedule, and that BYU is going to finish in the top 20 if that's the case. But, yeah, I'm thinking 9, and 9 would be solid.
So one of the tweet-back questions we got, which I'll have Matt answer too, but thought your perspective, if we win 10 games, or say 9-3 season. This was from Andre Hutchins. That's at AC underscore Hutchins. Say we go 9-3 in the regular season, so exempt the bowl game for a second. But two of those three losses are to Utah and Utah State. Would that be a... Well, let's throw out Utah State, and one of those losses is Utah. Do you think fans still would see this as a failure season?
No, because you beat Boise State and Texas.
Right.
Or Wisconsin or Notre Dame.
Right.
You know, like,
right.
I'll take three of those five. If BYU wins three of those five, I think that's really good. If BYU wins four of five, that's ridiculous. If it's five of five, it's the most memorable season in BYU history.
Yeah.
So, like, three of five is awesome. And I think that's how we should look at the season. Those five games, how does BYU do in those five? That will define the year.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, switching gears entirely, Jerem, one of your duties at BYU TV is calling the men's volleyball games. And so that's how I recognize your voice. I watched some of those. I was a big fan when I was in college, which is, well, depends on the age of our listeners, but fairly long time ago. And when BYU was a fantastic team, Ryan Millar, who was an All-American, and then on the national team, who, interestingly enough, I ran into in the airport not too long ago. He's fairly distinctive. What's it like calling those games, and what's the atmosphere for those of us that aren't in Provo anymore? What's the atmosphere like at those home games for the men's volleyball team, especially last season when we were such a good team?
Yeah. First off, it's really, really fun for me because that 99 season is what you're referring to with Millar and Asiya Antonetti and Mac Wilson and those guys. That's one of the top teams in NCAA history in men's volleyball. Volleyball Magazine rated it a couple years ago, and I was like, oh, yeah, right on, man. I was 16. Apparently, I did cool stuff when I was 16. came down with a friend this time to some of the matches, one of which was in the Marriott Center that set the NCAA record, you may recall, against Hawaii. And after two sets, everyone thought BYU won, and they started leaving, and then they said, no, it's not over. So I was a huge BYU volleyball fan growing up. I just thought that was, you know, one of the coolest things ever. So it's really fun to call the matches now, especially because BYU's been really good and, of course, came so close last season. So it's fun for me. They're a tremendous team, and it's fun to have guys like Ben Patch is in Turkey right now, actually, with the junior national team at the U21 World Championships. And then Taylor Sanders kind of on the USA B team down in Mexico City at the Pan Am Cup. I was texting them the other day, and I was just like, what the heck is going on? These guys are all over the world. Their careers are representing the U.S., and why are they texting me back? But anyway, super, super fun to have these awesome guys represent and be super down-to-earth and everything. And BYU, it was a really fun season last year. Unfortunately, they came up a little short, but it's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's a fun sport to watch, and it created a fandom of volleyball in me while I was there, and because it was just that 99 team was just spectacular. I had what I thought was a great date there to one of their matches, but the girl apparently didn't think so because I ignored her for the 2 hours while watching an exciting match.
The litmus test of dating.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. She failed, apparently.
I didn't answer your question about the Smith Fieldhouse, by the
yeah,
way.
Oh, sorry, how's, how, yeah, how's... I mean, it was... It sounds on TV like it's rocking, but when I was there, it was such an awesome venue because of how close it is and how packed in you are and how passionate the fans were. Is that still the case?
Yeah, and the numbers have dipped a little bit. It used to be, you know, 5,000-6,000 in the Smith Fieldhouse for a while there, and then for some reason, maybe it's because of so much TV, I'm not sure. You kind of peak at 4, 4.5, but most of the time you're at 3. Even with 3,000 people, it's the number one venue in America for men's volleyball. There's no pro US, you know, league of any kind. So literally Provo, Utah, what the heck, in the mountains. This sport that's meant to be played on the beach, typically, is dominant and rocking. It's like Jimmer's senior year, those games, like that same kind of feel, and Taylor Sander becomes the Jimmer when there's like 4,000 or 5,000 people in there, and it is It is intense and awesome. That's when I'm doing a game and we're about to go on the air and it's rocking like that, that's when I'm like, man, this is really fun. So super enjoyable. If you're listening and you haven't been to a volleyball match, you've got to go to one. You've got to go see, you know, the UC Irvines or the USCs of the world. It's worth it to go to the Smith Fieldhouse.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Jerem, it was great to have you on the podcast. We will definitely have you on again. I can't guarantee you'll catch Brandon, but you've got a better shot. If your goal is Greg, I'm here to tell you now, unless Greg like stops coming on the podcast, even then you've got a long road ahead. But we'll definitely have you on again, and certainly during the football season, but even more so, we've got to have you on before volleyball season so you can tell us what to look forward to.
Well, thanks for the time and keep up the good work.
All right, thanks, Jerem. It's the Rise and Shout podcast. Matt, how hot is it in Texas?
It's actually not that bad. It's only like 105. I mean, but it's not the heat. It's actually, right now, it's because it's night, it's really not bad at all. But it's the humidity that'll get you.
I've heard that before, that it's not the heat, it's the humidity.
Yeah.
Well, it got really warm today. It was 84. You know,
it's 84 degrees right now.
I had to
at 9:30 at night.
I had to roll up the sleeves on my long sleeve dress shirt at work.
Oh boy,
it was tough. Hey, if you can razz me for like half of the year, I get to dish a little, right? Is that fair?
No, it's going to be more than half of the year. it's going to be basically October to April.
Fair.
Okay, which is the whole period of time that you will be covered in snow. And I will be barbecuing.
I hate to break this to you. I know you're not great at math. That's half the year. October
to
April. It's exactly 6 months, you ninny. So Matt, weather aside, there was an announcement made this week on Twitter from the @LoyalCougars handle. And we are joining a new blog that will debut, I believe, on Saturday of this week, loyalcougars.com. There's going to be some awesome writers, some of the same crew that we wrote with and interacted with at vanquishthefoe.com have come to this new venture. Brett Hine, who's a friend of ours, well, a Twitter friend of ours, never met the guy, but he seems like a nice chap, is heading it up. There'll also be some former athletes, Brian Logan, and Jackson Emery will be writing for us, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a ton of fun.
So definitely starting on Saturday, check out loyalcougars.com. I'm going to have a piece at launch talking about the careers of Cody Hoffman and comparing his career to Austin Colley's career. So check that out. There'll be some other awesome stuff at launch. And that will be the new interweb home of the Rise and Shout podcast.
Rise and Shout.
So follow the new blog @LoyalCougars on Twitter. You can, of course, always message us on Twitter. That's @BYU_RiseShout. You can email Matt and I. Our email addresses were fortuitously not changed. That's Adam@LoyalCougars, Matt@LoyalCougars, and both of those need to finish with a .com. Matt, the other piece of this is they can always tell us what they think about the podcast or send us questions via either of those methods. So
yes,
keep that in mind. So, Matt, let's hop into this. Everyone's favorite segment. It's sweeping the nation, especially with our great intro to it. It's Cougars in the News!
Cougars in the News!
All right, so fall camp is almost done. And I'm sorry if I hurt anyone's ears. One piece of news that I find fascinating, and we've got a tweet bag question related to this that I'll pull out in just a moment. But Matt, we're a little light on defensive backs. So Michael Davis, a freshman wide receiver, has moved over to compete on the defensive side of the ball. And he intercepted a pass in, I think, his first practice on that side of the ball.
Pick six.
Nice job. Also extremely interesting is Johnny Linehan, who is a star of the national championship-winning rugby team, is joining the football team also to compete in camp as a well, really not much camp left, so I guess it'll be in the season for a position in the defensive backfield. Matt, what do you think about either of these two guys? Wide receivers switching to defensive back or back and forth is not that uncommon in college football. Rugby players coming off the pitch to compete is not so common. How would you handicap either of them being important to the defense this year?
I think at this point, anybody who has the letters DB next to their name is going to be important to the defense this year. You know, it's gotten to a point where, you know, it was a point in the defense that people were nervous about to begin with, and it has gotten a little bit scarier. So I think they'll be important. The question is, will they be important because they're doing a great job filling in for like some injured players, or are they going to be important because we got to figure out a way to cover up that deficiency? Now, when I think about these two guys, it's really difficult to tell. I mean, I don't know that we've got a ton of information really on either. I do love the fact that you know, one of them gets a pick six in practice, but I think that was even running with the second team D. I don't know what if it was the first or second O.
It was the first O. The pick was off Taysom Hill, which you got to feel bad if you're Hill.
Yeah, that's true. But that I'd say that's a good sign. But I think we're clearly talking about a couple of very athletic guys, one of whom was already recruited to play football, may have been, you know, that's had some experience in and around, another one who's been part of a national championship rugby team. I mean, the guy's clearly an athlete. And so you hope that you can coach him and get him to a point where he's going to be able to make plays as a defensive back at the Division I level.
So here's what I have envisioned in my head for Johnny Linehan, who's from New Zealand. Okay, I don't believe he has any American football experience.
Does he know how to put on the pads?
Well, actually, they mentioned in an article, I believe it was on the Daily Herald, from a friend of the podcast, Jason Franchuk. I don't think so.
So this is like the Ziggy Ansah story,
here's
right?
Here's the thing. You're taking a freakishly good athlete like Ansah, putting him into a new sport that... You know, I covered rugby when I was at BYU. There's some similarities, but it's mostly different. I mean, it's a very different sport that has some similarities. Can he be successful at it? Who knows? You know what I mean? But I wouldn't necessarily bet against him just because great athlete trumps not great athlete any day, right?
Right.
But I also wouldn't necessarily bet a lot on him. Being a major contributor to the team this year. So we have a question from listener Jared Cowley. That's at Jared Cowley on Twitter. He says, predict this, Matt. So you're ready to predict this?
I am ready to predict something.
And by the way, Jared, his avatar is a Boston Red Sox symbol. Nice job on the avatar. Surprising strong play from the cornerbacks, or does this position group sink an otherwise great defense? Matt? Your take first. Is this going to be a weakness, or at least not a weakness, possibly even a strength?
I don't think it's going to be a strength. I don't. I've released hope on that, but I think the defense is going to be able to overcome the deficiency. I don't see this as, you know, the millstone around the neck of the defense. I think that they will. I think they'll be okay. Even given the problems that they will have at this position, but I think that the cornerbacks are going to get picked on a lot by anybody that's at all decent throwing the football, and so they're going to have to come up with some ways to get some unique kinds of pressure on quarterbacks and really shut down the run. And you know, if they can figure out some of these other things, I think they overcome it and it's not a big deal. But I don't expect these guys to set records for INTs or anything.
Yeah, I think you're looking at a group that, if I'm Virginia, right, I am going to come out and attack these cornerbacks right off the get-go. And I think every team's going to do that until, especially teams that are passing teams, which, you know, historically that's not necessarily Virginia's game. But some of these other teams are likely to just come out and try to throw the ball all over the place and see if they can overcome. If they play well, then like you said, I think it becomes kind of a neutral factor. If they start giving up tons of big plays, that's not good.
That's a problem. But they really just need to be decent.
Yes, correct, correct. They just need to not be giving up 30, 40 yards at a chunk. Keep everything in front of them, those kind of cliche things. So Matt, that's our first in the news thing. The next thing is the wide receiver position. We're not going to spend a lot of time. We've talked about it before, but I've read almost like dueling articles. One saying, you know, hey, Skylar Ridley is going to be the number two guy behind Hoffman. And then, wait a second, Ross Oppo, don't forget him. He's got the skills and whatever else. If you had another prediction here, if you had to put money on it, who has the second most catches, third most catches? We'll take Falslev out of the picture too.
Are we removing tight ends from the picture? Because isn't this going to be the renaissance of the tight end?
Yeah, okay. You can keep tight ends in. And if you believe they're actually going to be a massive part of this offense, despite the fact that they've been non-existent in fall camp like they were in spring camp and like they've been in the last 2 years.
Secret weapons.
Go ahead. But would you put your money on Ridley or Oppo to have more catches this season?
Oppo, and I don't even have to think about it. I think Ridley's going to play a lot. I think Ridley is going to contribute. He's got a knack. He's got a flair for the spectacular catch. You know, he's clearly gotten himself to the point where they feel he's worthy of a scholarship. But I think that Oppo is healthier than he's been in a long time, and I think he's hungry. And so, I expect Oppo to be that number two receiver, but Ridley's going to, you know, keep him honest in practice and help push him to be the best he can be.
Yeah, I have on this podcast.
You love Skylar Ridley.
Have bashed Ridley a little bit. Have been a little bit of negative energy towards him. I just don't think he creates separation. I don't think he runs great routes. That being said, people can grow and change and become better, and either of them could do that. I'm actually going to put my money on Ridley.
Really?
I just think Oppo's had the opportunities. Ridley has really not had a lot of opportunity and has shown what he is, which is a decent wide receiver. I know he had the hype. I know he had the injuries to deal with, but he has yet to get on the field and actually consistently show. I mean, his supporters go back to one game in, like, 2 years ago,
right,
about how good he is. That doesn't make you a really good wide receiver to have one game, you know.
But in the defense of the position, which actually happens to be my opinion, wouldn't you agree that the offense during his time has been a three-ring circus?
Yeah, the offense has been a wreck, and the quarterback play has been well below average. Yes.
And Hoffman is freakishly talented, so he's been able to kind of rise above it.
Correct.
But Oppo's no Hoffman.
Correct. So he could
I think it's difficult to draw a lot of conclusions either way on Oppo at this point.
Fair enough. Okay. I will concede the point.
But you're still betting on Ridley.
No, I'll bet on Oppo.
Wow.
I'll concede the point. You're right.
Flip-flop.
I learned from some of the best. So, I was going to make so many political jokes, but I'll stay out of it, Bill Clinton. So next thing, Matt, is position battles are mainly done. There's some movement in the linebacker core, but we won't focus there. Offensive line seems to kind of be set. So same with the wide receivers and defensive backs that we just talked about, Matt. Well, more like the defensive backs. Is this going to be a position of strength, a neutral position, or something where we go similar to maybe like we thought last year? Holy cow, here we go again.
I believe that by the end of the season, save Taysom. We need to get t-shirts made now.
Save Taysom.
I think by the end of the season, the offensive line is going to be a strong point. I've got a lot of faith in Coach 2J I like the things that they're talking about, you know, this resurgence of the O-line culture. I am not encouraged by comments that I've read recently by the doctor and I about rotating through offensive linemen in the first three games before we really figure out who the main starters are. That screams, you know, question mark, exclamation point to me. Like, I don't know, you know, asterisk, you know, all sorts, whatever. But I don't know what to think about that. That makes me very nervous. Almost like, yeah, we're going to kind of test drive, you know, eight or nine of these guys for the first three games and then see what we come out with on the other side. I might feel better about it if we were playing teams other than the ones that we are in the first 3 weeks.
Oh, come so, on. You're not worried about Virginia, are you? We'll get to that later.
No, not necessarily. But I do like to at least know, you know, who your 11 guys are on offense before you kick off. And maybe I'm misreading. Maybe I'm reading too much into what Anaya said. You know, maybe really he's just, you know, trying to keep it open and trying to encourage people to compete. But, you know, and they've also said that people are going to rotate in and out a lot. So maybe he's just speaking to that. But I don't get a real clear idea that they're sure of what they've got. And I don't know that the five guys that are currently listed really fit the mold, at least the way I see it, of what they're looking for in a BYU offensive lineman going forward.
Yeah. I think this – I'm going to trust the coaching staff on this one and think this is at least a neutral unit, if not a strength. I share your worries about the – we're still not quite sure who it is. But, you know, offensive line shuffle in their entries. So it's not totally atypical to have a few different lineups in your first few games in any season, right?
Yeah, and I think they'll get there by the end of the year. But it's appearing to me like the first couple of games, it's gonna be
could be messy. So Matt, let's move into full season preview mode. Okay, we're gonna do some through the tweet bag and also through my questions to you. We're gonna do a little over under and predictions on. Let's see, four players in particular: Taysom Hill, Cody Hoffman, Jamal Williams, and Mr. Kyle Van Noy. Okay.
All right.
So let's start with the quarterback position and Taysom Hill. All right.
Okay. What do you got?
Okay. Did your voice just crack?
No, it was the computer.
Yeah, puberty's tough. Hang in there, kid.
It was the internet.
It was the internet. Taysom Hill. So last year, BYU's quarterbacks combined for 3,200 yards passing, 25 touchdowns, and 17 interceptions. Okay. The BYU record for passing yards is 5,188 by Ty Detmer in 1990. The record for TD passes is Jim McMahon with 47 touchdown passes in 1980. So that's our context, Matt. Over under 3,900 yards passing for Taysom Hill.
Over. Go fast, go hard.
So 3,900 would place him, if he got exactly that number, it would be the ninth best total in BYU history.
Oh yeah.
Okay. All right. Just set in context. Touchdown passes. Last year, as I said, three different quarterbacks combined for 25. Over under 29.5 for Taysom Hill.
Over.
Man, you are bullish.
I've got numbers picked in my head on this. And so I am sticking with the numbers that I laid out before you gave me where the you know, what the over under.
Excellent,
was.
As you should. 30 would, if he got 30 touchdown passes, that would be the 12th best in school history. 30 touchdown passes was done by Robbie Bosco in 1985 and Jim McMahon in 1981. Touchdown passes are a little fluky, so they're harder to predict. I'm going to go under on that, but I will go over on the yards. So I'm with you on the yards. I'm not with you on the touchdown passes. So QB rushing yards for Taysom Hill.
Oh.
Did you do this one? Did you look at this?
I think I'm good here.
Totally didn't. QB rushing yards. So for some context, last year, Riley Nelson had 196 yards rushing and Taysom Hill had 336 yards rushing, which was actually second on the team, interestingly enough. Over under 473 yards rushing for Taysom Hill.
I'm taking the under here.
Ah, taking the under.
Okay. Yeah, I think that there's going to be some measures taken to protect the young man's knees. I think the offense is going to be designed so that he's not. I don't think he's going to be up in the 470 range.
I'm taking the over.
Oh, you're a crazy man.
The record is Virgil Carter in 1965, according to Cougar stats, had 474 yards. Right. Steve Young and Brandon.
I don't think he's going to. You think he'll break Virgil Carter's record?
Yes, absolutely. I would think he will be north of 500 yards.
See, I couldn't take him. I couldn't take him past. I couldn't take him past Carter.
Yeah, I think I would be shocked if he doesn't eclipse 400. He did 336 yards in how many games? The guy averaged 6 yards per carry, and that's taking into the fact that a bunch of those carries, or several of them, were sacks. You know, so I'm all in on his running ability. Absolutely all in on his running ability. Okay, so let's move players, Matt. We're going to now move to Cody Hoffman, who is all right. on verge of breaking basically every single career receiving record that we have. He'll, barring injury, break yards, catches, and touchdowns pretty easily. But we're talking about one season, Matt. So, over under receiving yards for Cody Hoffman, 1248. I thought you had these already picked up.
Yeah, but you're really close. You're really close on this one.
Yeah, yeah. I'm good at this. But they don't call me the best for nothing. Well, actually, nobody calls me the best, but
I'm going to take the over on this.
Going to take the over on the yards. I will as well.
I think he picks up a lot of the yards. You know, if I'm going to take, I took Taysom Hill at over 3,900 passing yards, right? So,
yes.
You know, when yes, I break down where I think that yardage is going to land receiver wise, I have to take the over here on Hoffman at 1248.
Okay. Will he break the record of Austin Colley with 1538?
No, I think he's in between those two numbers.
And those are two of the best seasons, of course, in the history of the school. Over under 100 receptions. I'll give you 100.5 receptions.
Hey, throw. Do you have some context on this one?
Yes, the record is Austin Colley, 106 catches. Hoffman had 100 catches last year. Only three receivers in BYU history, Colley, Hoffman, and Jay Miller in 1973, have eclipsed the 100 catch mark. So only three times in school history has it been done. Only four receivers have ever even gotten over 90.
So, but you're giving me 100.5?
Yes. Does he better take what he did last year in number of catches?
Yes.
I'm going to take the under. I agree with you on the yards, but I think his yards per catch, because he will have quarterbacks that can throw more than 10 yards down the field. Ayo! I think he had 12.5 yards per catch. I think that goes up closer to 14, 15. And therefore, he only needs to get, you know, 85, 90 catches to, you know, zip past the 1248 from last year.
Okay, I see that. I can see that.
Okay, all right. So that's Cody. That's Cody Hoffman. Let's go on now to Jamal Williams.
Yes.
Jamal Williams. Last year, Jamal Williams carried the ball 166 times for 775 yards and 12 touchdowns. So that's a little, and of course, that was all of those marks are top on the team. The all-time mark for number of yards in a season is Luke Staley in 2001 with 1,582. The touchdowns is also Luke Staley with 24. The average yards per carry is also Luke Staley at 8.1. All in that same awesome, awesome season in which he was basically like Bo Jackson on Super Tecmo Bowl. So let's go over and under on Jamal Williams' net rushing yards, so total rushing yards of 1,250. Matt? That would put him fourth all time in season rushing yards.
Man, I think I'm too bullish on the offense. I'm taking an over here.
Oh my gosh!
But when I look at the map, like, I don't know that it's even possible.
Are we scoring
50 points
a game?
Well, and don't even get me started on the number of carries, because I think I've got too many offensive plays worked in.
Well, it's going to be go fast, go hard, right?
We're not going to be doing go fast or go hard. We are doing both, right?
Yes.
All right, I'm sticking with the over then.
I am going to do the under. I think they will spread this out a little bit more because of the pace of the offense.
Right, and they've got all of those healthy running backs that they can give the ball to. So, yeah.
Are you being sarcastic?
What? Sarcasm?
You're being sarcastic.
Listen, I'm not being mean about it. I mean, it's a bad situation. I feel bad for, you know, for people, but...
Well, does he get over 200 carries?
I think he's
going to
see a lot of carries.
Does he get over 200 carries?
That's the whole thing I'm struggling with. When I look at how many plays I think they're realistically going to run,
so
you know, 13, and what I think is going to happen with the passing game, I don't know, but I'm leaning yes.
13 running backs in BYU history have gotten over 200 carries. Now, if you look at a lot of these offenses like Arizona and like Oregon, they actually like to run because this type of offense can open up massive running lanes once you have the defense on their heels. And you get a talented running back like Jamal Williams, he can pick up huge chunks of yards. Yeah. So I don't think it's crazy to pick the over on 1250. I am not going to pick the over, though. I'm going to pick the under, but probably just slightly. And I think on the carries as well, it will be near 200, give or take on that one. So Matt, let's do Kyle Van Ooy. Okay? Kyle
yep.
Van Ooy. You may have heard of him. He's pretty good. So last season, Kyle Van Ooy had... fairly low tackle total for him, 52 tackles, but 13 sacks is pretty good.
Mm, 22, that's not bad.
22 of his 52 tackles were for a loss, which is amazing, actually. 5 forced fumbles, 8 QB hurries, and, oh yeah, 2 interceptions, including 1 return for a touchdown. So, Matt, let's talk sacks first.
Mm-hmm.
He last year, his total of 13, come on, Cougar Stats, ranks tied for 7th in there. Let's set it at 12.5 sacks this season, over under. What are you taking?
I'm taking the under here.
Yes, as am I.
At this point, I just don't see the necessary supporting cast to get him there.
Yes, I agree with you. And if you look at the list, nobody repeated. In that like top 20 area, I don't think anybody except for Buck, Jason Buck repeated. It's really hard once you're last year they had to keep Ansa at bay, and so I'm with you. His tackle total over under his tackle total from last season of 52.
Over.
I take that as well. Over under. 1.5 interceptions.
Over.
You take the over.
Oh, I definitely take the over on that.
Interesting. He has had 3 interceptions in one season and in 2011, 2 interceptions last year. So I think it's a pretty safe. He is a ball hawk. He's good at that. So
and given what's going to be, given what I expect to see the defense do, I think he's going to be in situations more often in 2013 than he was in 2012 to get interceptions.
Well, and some of the blitzing packages are going to confuse. We've got a couple of signal callers that we're going to face that are inexperienced, and they're going to be scared of him blitzing, and they're going to throw thinking he's coming, and all of a sudden it's going to be in his gut.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot like Sanchez to Ansa.
Yes, a lot like Sanchez to Ansa. No, I think all these quarterbacks are better than Mark Sanchez.
I'm better than Mark Sanchez.
That's unfair to these quarterbacks. How dare you? How dare you, sir? So, all right. So we have done our over-unders on these players, which, of course, we will forget about and never revisit.
No, and I have already forgotten what I've committed to here.
I have actually written them all down. And we're coming back to them at the end of the season when we summarize. So,
that's great, because I feel pretty good about it. What did I say?
Exactly. Exactly. So, Matt, it's time for us to go game by game. We have done this probably 10 times during the offseason. But this time,
I do it different every time.
It's for real. All right? So, Matt, first up is Virginia. Okay? Last year, they were 4-8, and they were ranked, according to Football Outsiders, they were the 76th best team in college football, which, in case you're scoring at home, is not particularly good. I think most prognosticators have them maybe improving marginally over last year, but I don't think anybody's accounting them to be a big factor in the ACC. Matt, who you got, victory or loss at Virginia in Charlottesville?
I think the Cougars just come out with a win.
Yeah, I don't think, quite frankly, I don't think this is going to be very close. I don't think it's going to be very close. Justin Sweeney has a tweet bag question for us.
Sweeney!
At Justin D. Sweeney. More like...
I want to talk to him whenever he comes up. I'm like, what's up, Sweeney?
What's up, dude?
But he's not really here. He can't talk back to me.
Never talked to him.
No, I haven't.
I have. He came on the podcast once.
I remember that.
Yes, yes. So he asked, more likely to happen. He sent us like 10 questions. We're not answering all of those, Sweeney. BYU scores, more likely to happen, BYU scores 35 or more versus UVA, or BYU loses to UVA? I'll answer that first. I think it's more likely they score 35, though I don't think they will score more than 35. I think the chances of them losing at Virginia, I know we're only favored by like 3 points last time I looked at the line. I think it's a ridiculous line. I think Vegas is insane. I don't think Virginia's that good. So I think we beat them, and it doesn't necessarily prove that we're a good team or not.
Well, you know what? I feel like Vegas has the line that close because, listen, outside of Cougar Town, nobody's really sure what to expect from a brand new offense, a new starting quarterback, and all of these other things, given where we've been on offense.
Not a new starting quarterback. You played 2.5 games.
Right. So, I mean, but as like the whole off season and all this, whatever. So
Vegas is stupid.
Anyway, I think it's a legitimate line.
Oh,
and
dude.
I'm going to say that it is more likely they lose this game than they score 35 points.
Wow.
I don't think either are going to happen.
You hate the Cougars.
I don't think either of those things are going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think either of them are actually that likely. And I may or may not have put my entire 401k on the over.
That was a bad decision.
Point line. So
that was a poor decision.
Maybe not my best. Is that what you're
saying? Milk was a bad choice.
Yes, that was a bad choice. All right. So Texas, in Provo last season, they were, let me pull this up, 9-4, kind of a disappointing team. Football Outsiders had them ranked as the 36th best team. Most prognosticators and pollsters have them as a top 25 team this year, Matt, at home in Provo. Who you got?
Oh boy. This is where it's going to start to get painful. I'm taking the Longhorns.
As am I. So we're going to be 1-1 after that second Saturday of the college football season. Then we get an early bye, which I think will actually be excellent for the Cougars. Mm-hmm. And then a couple weeks after that, it's Utah, Matt. Now, you may not know this, but Utah wasn't actually very good last year. They did beat us, but they were 5-7. Actually ranked as the 78th best team, according to Football Outsiders S&P rankings. Again, prognosticators have them as better, but I don't think anybody's expecting a top 30 type of performance from the Utes. I certainly am not. Again, this game is in the friendly confines of Lavelle Edwards Stadium. Who do you got?
I've got the Cougars.
Do we break this? We break this, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Because I'm tired of losing to them.
Yeah, I see this as a win.
So,
especially with the extra week there, and you know, at that point, we should know who the starting offensive linemen are.
Yep.
I feel good about that.
I also take the win. I don't think they're going to be that good of a team. I think we're going to be better, and it'll be at home, and we'll have. Competent offensive play calling. So the next Friday, so 6 days later, Middle Tennessee at Lavelle Edwards Stadium again. Football Outsiders had them as the 90th best team, despite their 9-3 record, because, let's be honest, they didn't play anybody. This will be a big test for them. I'm taking Middle Tennessee State. Are you taking Middle Tennessee? I'm totally kidding.
I thought you had lost your mind
for a
second.
I'm totally kidding. I don't think
this game isn't even close.
BYU wins this easy. We'll move on to the next game. Another week later, another Friday night in Romney Stadium in Logan. It's Utah State. Of course, we've had some very close calls with them the last couple of seasons. But luckily, we've been able to overcome that. But last year, they were 11-2. Football Outsiders actually had them as the 8th best team in the country, which I actually think they were way underrated by most college football watchers. I don't know if they're the 8th best team, but I think they were a top 20 team last year. Lost a coach, lost some players. So I think most people are expecting quite a significant dip. Matt, who you got?
I think this is a BYU win.
I agree.
I think it'll be a good game. I think it'll be. I don't necessarily see this as a blowout, but I think BYU wins this.
So going into homecoming, we have both of us have the exact same record. We are 4-1, a loss against Texas, and victories over in-state rivals Utah and Utah State. Georgia Tech on the 12th of October. That's again in Lavelle Edwards Stadium. This is, we played them, was it last year or the year before already?
I think it was the year before already.
They were 7-7 last year, but they played some good teams. Football Outsiders had them as the 29th best team in the country. So last year's record could be a little deceiving. They, of course, have an offense that's kind of hit and miss. And sometimes when it hits, it's really good. And when it misses, it can be quite bad. So I haven't really, there's not a lot of buzz about the Yellow Jackets, Matt, but this is a game that I'll be honest, it frightens me. Who you got?
I think this game is absolutely a potential loss. And this is one of the games, as we've gone through this schedule several times, I believe this is a game that I have flip-flopped.
Yes, you have. So
now you're telling me I have to make my final pick, which really I'm just stalling at this point. Because I'm trying to make a last-minute decision based on how many losses I think they're going to end up with at the end of the year and whether or not I think this fits into
that. You're like that guy on Princess Bride. He's just stalling. Just trying to get the Dread Pirate Roberts to give something away.
That's right. And you've given everything away. I know exactly where the poison is. And the poison is not in Lavelle Edwards Stadium on October 12th. I think the Cougars win this game, but it's going to come down to whether or not the defense can figure out how to stop these guys. But I think they come together with a very specific scheme, and I think Superman Van Noy is the central piece of that, and he will this defense to stop that offense.
I agree. Georgia Tech is a win for the Cougars. The next week, October 19th, at Houston, you will be at that game. I believe I am correct in saying that. They weren't very good this year. They weren't last year. They're not going to be very good this year when Cougars.
Yeah.
At this point, we're going to be ranked in the top 25. That's my prediction. Bold, bold prediction. Headed into the Friday before Halloween. Boise State coming into Lavelle Edwards Stadium. They were 11-2 last year. I think an underrated team last year. I don't think people realize that how well our defense played against a offense that ended up being a pretty decent offense when all came as said and done. Not an elite offense, but a lot better than they thought. They also have a pretty good defense year in and year out. I am taking Boise State in this game, as much as that makes me sad.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm also picking the Broncos here.
So that would be, what's our record now?
We've now lost two.
Yes, but that's just half of the record.
And we have won six.
Six, so 6-2. Unfortunately, the schedule gets a little bit, it does not give up.
Gets a little intense here.
We'll be at Camp Randall Stadium against Wisconsin. Of course, Wisconsin is a good team, historically speaking. They were 8-6 last year, but ranked as a top 20 team by Football Outsiders. And I think most people assume they will be a good team again, top 30 type of team this season. It's at Wisconsin, Matt. Lots of cheese, lots of beer. Who do you got?
I've got Wisconsin in this game.
Yes, as do I. So now we've got them at 6-3. They go to Idaho State. They're 7-3. We're not even going to talk about that game. Notre Dame. We were in South Bend last year. We almost beat them. Cody Hoffman is, I believe, still open. And unfortunately, Riley will still miss him. Saturday, November 23rd. Notre Dame still should be pretty good, but I think there's some mixed among prognosticators if they'll be any good. Matt, who do you got?
I'm leaning Irish. I think it's a tough game to win on the road. I think they are going to be pretty good. You know, I actually got a text message from somebody after episode 116 about this particular game and some comments we made about the most winnable big game. And a friend of mine felt like Notre Dame was probably in that category, and I just don't think it is.
We win. I don't think Notre Dame's way overrated this year, based on the fact that they weren't as good, I think, as people think they were last year. Our offense moved the ball against those guys. They were supposed to be an elite defense. We couldn't move the ball against anybody. I just think they're overrated. It's Notre Dame. They're often overrated. But I think we win this
game.
They
played a lot of close games, and I know it's a different team. You know, they lost a lot of pieces, but I feel like they are built and coached to do just what they need to do to win.
I don't disagree with that.
And I think that's what happened last year when they played us.
Well, that and Cody Hoffman was wide open. But we disagree on that one. So you have us at 4 losses at that point, right? Losses to, yes, Notre Dame, Wisconsin, Boise State, and Texas. Basically, you have us losing to all of the teams that, on paper, at the beginning of the year, are better than us.
Yeah.
By most prognostications. Nevada ends the season in Reno, so we end with 2 road games. We'll be on the terrible CBS Sports Network. Matt, who do you got?
I got BYU.
I do too. So you have them at 8-4. I have them at 9-3. Both of us, of course, have them going to the bowl game. Neither of us are predicting a special season, Matt. So headed to the tweet bag, we got a bunch of questions that relate to this. More likely, this is again Sweeney, 7-6 or 10 wins?
10 wins, I think, is more likely.
I agree. But neither.
I feel like I've picked all the games that they really might lose, and the wins I've picked here, I feel really good about. Except for maybe Georgia Tech, because I think that one could get crazy. But I think it's more likely that they are better than I expect them to be than it is that they're worse than I expect them to be.
Right. Another overall season question. This is from Andre Hutchins. I talk about this with Jerem Jordan as well. That's at AC_Hutchins. Will a 9-3 season still be considered a successful season if 2 of the 3 losses are to Utah and Utah State? That would be very depressing.
Yeah, that's bad.
If we win like 3 of those 4 games against Texas, Boise State, Wisconsin, and Notre Dame, and then drop Utah and Utah State, I think it's still a success because you won.
It's a sad, sad story if that happens.
It's kind of a sad success.
If that's what happens, then the story is like, hey, this is a good team that blew it.
This is a good team that blew it. Yes. Though, depending on Utah State, it may be no shame. They may end up being a top 30 team this year. I mean,
okay.
I don't think Utah has that upside.
Are they better than the combination of Wisconsin, Notre Dame, and Texas?
No. Absolutely not. But I'm just saying,
even if they're in the top 30, they're not.
No. I agree. But what I'm saying is that it may be at the end of the year you look back and go, you know what, Utah State on the road is not a bad loss, right? At the end of the year.
Yeah,
so it makes it less sad, I think, to me. I don't think Utah's going to be that good, and they've beat us a bunch of times in a row. That one, I think, if you don't win, will leave a bad taste in everybody's mouth. But if you win, say you don't do that. Say it's more like a 10-2 season and you lose to, I'm making this up, Wisconsin and Utah. I don't think that makes it not a special season.
No, I could probably get over that.
You know, if you got to 10-2 at 9-3 and you lost to Utah, Texas, and Boise, that becomes not as special by a good margin. Well, Matt, that is all the time we have for. Thanks for all the tweet bag questions. You, of course, can always do this at BYU_RiseShout on Twitter. Tanner Wallace, that's at RTWall30, asked us which of the three big games, Texas, Notre Dame, Wisconsin. I think there's four big games because I think Boise State's in there too. But he thinks most likely to win. I think we kind of agree it's Notre Dame, right? Of the big four games, do you think Boise's the most winnable? Because it's at home.
I think Boise might be the most winnable because it's at home.
Yeah, yeah. I actually think it's Notre Dame. I think Boise State has top five upside this year, and I don't think Notre Dame does. I don't think Notre Dame does. And actually, I want to get us out on one last thing. Irish Mexican at Bullishism, national championship team, Matt. Who do you have in college football if you had to pick one team right now? Who would you pick?
I'm going to go with the safe and popular pick. Roll Tide. It's Alabama.
That is very, very boring, I have to say. That is very, very boring.
Who's going to beat him? Look at the schedule. Who's going to beat him?
I have one team for you, sir. One team and one team only.
Who do you got? The Ducks?
Ohio State.
Really?
I actually...
You're a bigger... Big Ten homer than I am.
Well, here's the thing. It's all about once the 14 playoff comes, the everything changes, right? But in this case, if we look at Ohio State's path to the national championship game, okay?
Right.
The Big Ten is not particularly strong. There is a very good chance that they play only two top 30 teams the entire year. Okay? So that'll hurt their strength of schedule. Right. But if they go undefeated and then beat one of those ranked teams a second time in the Big Ten championship game, I believe that, like you, that Alabama is very likely to be there again. But I wouldn't rule out Georgia.
Georgia almost beat them last year.
They have, I mean...
Probably should have, but for some poor coaching decisions in the last 60 seconds of the game.
Yeah, unfortunately, their fate is not in their own hands until the championship game. Because they don't play, I don't believe they play Alabama this year during the regular season. So their fate isn't entirely in their hands this year. Last year was the year for them to do it, right? Because fate was in their hands. But I think Ohio State and Georgia are the two teams that I'm going to pick as the most likely to not be Alabama. My dark horse until all of this garbage with Johnny Football came down was A&M.
Yeah, but that's such a mess now. Who knows what their offense is going to look like?
I don't know. I mean, if he ends up playing, if he doesn't play, then forget anything I just said. I just thought with as good as he was last year, special quarterbacks in college football can sometimes just load a team on their shoulder and take them deep, deep, deep into the season, you know?
Right.
Do you have any other teams that you might think could be a surprise figure in there?
I do like Ohio State. For the same reasons you mentioned, I think
and
that
you're burning
Oregon
love for Urban Meyer,
right? And I do think Oregon is going to be interesting for some of the same reasons.
Yes,
I don't know that they're going to be. I don't know that their conference schedule is going to be particular. It's not the SEC. But you know, these are all the safe teams that everybody's got ranked real highly. So as far as any real dark horse picks. Right now, I'm reserving judgment on that until I've at least seen 1 week of games.
Yeah. The other one I'll just throw out there is TCU. I don't know that the Big 12 will be strong enough, though.
Really?
Unless a bunch. Yeah, because that conference to me is kind of wide open. Like, there's not one team where I go, oh, that's the team. You know what I mean?
Okay, that's true.
Could be Oklahoma. It could be. And they start off, TCU starts the season with LSU. And I think is that a neutral game? That's a neutral game, right? That's one of those kickoff games.
Yeah.
So I don't remember where it is. But they play on a neutral field an SEC team. If they beat them, they will go from, I think right now they're ranked, I don't know, like 20th or something like that in the polls. They'll jump into the top 10. And then it's just a matter of, can they keep winning? I mean, again, their schedule isn't totally soft, but because the conference isn't maybe predicted to be as strong, but they play both Texas and Oklahoma, right? So they get the big boys. It's not a huge conference. And then it becomes kind of a clear path after the Texas game for them. So that's another team. All right, Matt. Well, last reminder, LoyalCougars.com launches this week. Go check it out. Email us, adam@loyalcougars.com, matt@loyalcougars.com. And next week, we're going to be previewing an actual football game.
Yes!
Which is awesomely, awesomely exciting. So, once again, check everything out. We'll be back next week to talk real football and preview the Virginia game. And we, of course, will catch you later.
Go Cougars!